My mentor on this project was Jody Lapidus, and she is the statistics queen. So I'm pretty sure if I ran these through her and she said they're okay, then they're okay. This is just a outline. I'm going to talk about the background, methods, statistical approach, results, and discussion, the typical categories, which I like to stick to. Injuries, as you may or may not know if you work in Indian health, are the leading cause of death for American Indians and Alaska Natives age 1 to 44, and that's not the case for white, non-Hispanic, or other races. And American Indian Alaska Native children have the highest fatal injury rate of any race in the U.S., making them, they're 3.8 times more likely to die from a motor vehicle injury than other races. And they also have about twice the hospitalizations, at least in Washington State. That's harder data to come by. And this is recent data this year, and it's 20-year mortality trends for motor vehicle injuries for children age 1 to 4. And you can see a downward trend for all races, but you'll also see that really, really high number up there. That's the American Indian and Alaska Natives. So a huge disparity. And even in this last, most recent average time, there's even an increase, which is quite alarming. Now, the reduction that I just showed you is largely due to child seats being invented and being used. It reduces risk by 62% to 73% of death, reduces risk of death by about that. Also reduces hospitalizations. Other factors contributing to the decrease, improved roads, our cars are safer, and possibly reduced drinking and driving, although there's various reports if that's true or not. So child safety seat laws are, those are state laws. It's not federal, as you probably would know. So it's up to each state. And laws are present in all 50 states. Laws may be primary or secondary. Primary meaning the police may pull you over for the violation, the seatbelt violation alone. Secondary means you can get a citation if you're pulled over for something else. But the issue for tribes is that tribes are sovereign nations, so not subject to state laws for their lands. So they can decide to pass laws or to not pass laws or what they want their laws to be. And the enforcement of those laws really depends on each individual's tribe agreement with local and state authorities. And it might be different for a tribe that has, say, a major highway that runs through the reservation. Enforcement might be tribal police. It might be state or local police. So the data that I'm talking about is 2003 Northwest Tribal Child Safety Seat Study, and that was Francine Romero. She was the principal investigator, and it was a cross-sectional observational survey of vehicles. We randomly selected 6 tribes in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, the area that we serve, and the driver or the child needed to have American Indian or Alaska Native heritage, needed to have a child in the vehicle that was age 8 or younger. And 4 of the participating tribes had well-defined tribal lands that the people actually live on, and 2 of them do not. And that comes into play with the laws and the enforcement. 5 of the tribes had laws similar or identical to the state law, and 1 had no law. And tribal police enforced passenger restraint laws in 4 of the tribes, 1 of which did not have a law, so there would be no enforcement. And state and county police were responsible for enforcement in 2 of the tribes, and that was because of the lands not being well-defined or inhabited. So the places where we surveyed the people, they were on state or local territory. We conducted our surveys in June or July of 2003. We surveyed 574 vehicles. It's actually more of those, but some of them I had to throw out. 816 children age 8 or younger. The driver estimated children's age, weight, distance from home, and a trained observer looked in to observe the child's seating position, what restraint that child was using, was the driver restrained, and then we also asked the driver their awareness of recommendations for child safety seats. We asked them if they were interested in more information, things like that. So in 2003, since this is 4 years old, the laws are different. in Idaho, Oregon, and Washington than they are now. In 2003, Washington was the only state that had a booster seat law, and Idaho and Oregon did not, but they do now. All three have booster seat requirements, and Washington just bumped theirs up to match the NHTSA and the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines. It's exactly their guidelines. My statistical approach, I chose to divide the children into three categories of restraint use. They were either properly restrained, they were incorrectly restrained, meaning they were using a restraint not recommended for that child's age and weight. We didn't measure height because it was too hard for drivers to estimate. Or they were unrestrained. So with the incorrect, it doesn't mean that the straps were too loose. We didn't do anything like that. I didn't do it based on if they were in the front seat or the back seat. It was just, were they using the restraint that's recommended for their age and weight? And then to identify factors that were associated with child restraint status, I constructed three binary logistic regression models and used a generalized estimating equation method to account for clustering of children within the vehicle, since if they're riding in the same vehicle, they're not independent of each other. And some people thought this is what we might see, but we didn't actually see that. Overall, 29% of the children were properly restrained, 30% incorrectly restrained, and 41% unrestrained, not using any type of restraint. And if you stratify it by type of law, and I went with enforcement of the law, with a state-enforced law, a tribe-enforced law, or no law, you can see that the risk of unrestraint just steps up with each of those categories. Proper restraint is higher for state and similar for tribe or no law, but with the tribe enforced, the incorrect is higher. So they're doing something rather than nothing. And this is for drivers. You see the exact same thing with drivers, the percent of drivers that were restrained. And the purple is children using any type of restraint. So I wanted to make sure that what I just showed you isn't some kind of thing like, well, all the older children were at places with no law. So I wanted to adjust for those kind of things. So this is the things that were associated with properly restrained compared to unrestrained. And that was child seat eligibility, what seat they were supposed to be in based on their age and weight, driver seat belt use, child seating location, type of law and enforcement, driver relationship to the child, vehicle model year. So this is adjusted for all those things, including driver's age and distance from home, which were not associated with proper versus unrestrained use. So the odds ratio adjusted for all these factors for children subject to a state law compared to no law is 4.4. So adjusted for all those things, if they were subject to a state law, they were 4.4 times more likely to be properly restrained than unrestrained. And a tribal law was no different. For properly restrained versus unrestrained, there was no difference for the tribal law compared to no law. When I looked at incorrect versus unrestrained, the things that were associated with incorrect use. Now, this is better than being unrestrained, so this is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just not the best thing. And that was driver's seatbelt use, type of law and enforcement, child age, seating location, vehicle model year, distance from home. And it's also adjusted for those other things that were not significant that I mentioned before. And this is where you see the impact of the tribal law. For kids riding in areas subject to a tribal law compared to no law, they were 6.6 times more likely to be using an incorrect restraint versus no restraint. So it wasn't the correct thing, but it got them to be using some type of restraint. So that is good. And for a state law versus no law, 2.4. So the state law still had an impact there. And in the last model, it was properly restrained versus incorrectly restrained, and law status and enforcement were not significant in this model for either state or tribal law. Didn't get the children to be properly versus incorrect. The things that made the difference with that was child seat eligibility, driver relationship to the child, that is if the driver was riding with his or her own parent, they were more likely to be using a proper proper restraint rather than incorrect restraint and child seating location. So for our discussion, tribal child safety seat laws were effective at getting children to use some type of restraint, not necessarily the correct restraint. So it didn't make the difference between that next step of getting it right. And why might this be? We've had discussions about it, lots of different things that we're hearing from the tribes and from people who work with the tribes. Laws do make a statement about a community's priorities, and this is especially true probably for tribes where they feel more ownership of that law because they know we got together as a community and we decided to have that law. So it's saying this is important to us to have our children protected while they're riding in vehicles. Enforcement may be more motivating than just having the law, and that might be why we see the difference between the state law and the tribal law for having kids properly restrained compared to unrestrained. We heard people say that they felt like they were more at risk of getting a ticket from the state because maybe their uncle was the tribal police officer, so their uncle would probably not give them a ticket. Another person said, well, my grandfather is on tribal council, and if I get a ticket, then I will just take it to my grandfather and say, I can't pay this. And they'll say, okay, we understand. We don't want this to be a hardship for you. And these are just some of the different things I've heard. And when we have questions, I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. And as we know from many other studies, the perceived risk of getting a ticket outweighs the perceived risk of crashing. So what do we know other than in the Northwest, because this was restricted to Oregon, Idaho, and Washington, about restraint use among American Indians and Alaska Natives? There really wasn't anything before NHTSA, that's National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They established the first baseline for reservations in 2004. So this was after our study in 2003. And they found that the overall seatbelt use for occupants was about 55%, and that's the same as what we saw, and that it ranged largely by location. And then it really varied by law status. So higher for reservations with a primary law, lower for reservations with a secondary law, and really low, 26%, on reservations with no seatbelt law. Other things that we know about seatbelt laws in Indian country, that we know that child restraint laws were effective for Navajo. After they passed a law and did a big enforcement campaign, they have actually seen a reduction in injuries. Looking at the hospital data, there's been a big drop in the injuries of children since they passed their law and enforced it. And we also saw in two areas in Washington, and they've published this, so I'll include their names, Warm Springs and the Yakima Nation. After Washington passed a primary law, these two reservations passed a primary law, and they did observations just like we did in our study, and they observed an increase in use. The limitations of this is there's only 6 tribes. So even though there are more than 100 observations per tribe, I can't adjust for every single thing. I can't adjust for state that the reservation was in, which has been shown in other studies to be significantly predictive of seatbelt use. I couldn't break it down into whether the tribal law was primary or secondary, which I'm guessing has an impact, but I only have 6 tribes, so I had to choose, and I chose enforcement. And I tried some of the other models, but I can't adjust for all of those things. If I had 100 tribes, I could, but I only had 6. So it does not adjust for those other things that probably have an impact. So our conclusions from this, that American Indian and Alaska Native are at excess risk for motor vehicle injury death, that we know conclusively, and are at higher risk for incorrect and non-restraint use. There is a pressing need for culturally competent interventions. Possibly the difference between proper restraint and incorrect restraint is having that. Those seats are expensive. I just went to buy an extra seat for my child, and the seats that my kids ride in are $300. That's not really feasible for our tribes. I wanted to buy a cheap second seat, and I thought maybe I could get one for about $40. My cheap second seat was $100. So if you've got a bunch of kids, that's really expensive. So the cost may be prohibitive. And then also maybe just not having that awareness still. It seems kind of obvious, but... And tribal laws are effective, as I showed. They're effective at getting children to use a restraint, not necessarily the correct restraint, but effective at getting to use a restraint. Possibly increased enforcement would be effective for that. And I just wanted to acknowledge our 6 participating tribes, and Jody Lapidus, that was my mentor for this, and some people at the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board that do such good work. My list of references is if anyone really wants to see them. And that's a former coworker of mine's little boy. Right, and at the time, 2 of them had certified passenger technicians, you know what I'm talking about, CPS technicians, and many of them, their WIC works with them to get access to the infant seats, and that's why we saw really high use for infants, and where we saw that drop off was when the babies graduated to a child safety seat, because those are harder to get, and some of the tribes that did have some of the higher rates, they worked with the county to get those seats. And then booster seats we rarely saw booster seats. But at the time in 2003, only one of the states had a booster seat law. So it might be higher now if we observe that now. We did ask that. And I have that in another report, lengthy report, so that wasn't the focus of this. But we heard cost, we heard I didn't know, I heard we have the seat, but it's in another vehicle. I heard, this isn't my child. Which I think they actually meant, this isn't my child, I don't have a seat for the child, but they said, this is my child, so they're verbatim responses. It sounds kind of funny. And we also asked for the kids that were in those seats, why, and it was kind of fun to see. Safety, it's the law, but then some other fun things like, it's a really cool seat, it has a cup holder. The child likes the seat, the child can see out of the vehicle better. So it was kind of fun. No difference between men and women, no difference between mothers and fathers, a difference between parents of that child and non-parents. About parents were 4 times more likely to have that kid properly restrained.